Hi, I'm Dr. Andrea Stover, licensed marriage and family therapist, and you're listening to the Modern Day Romantic Podcast. Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. Today, we are going to be exploring vampire relationships in romantic partnerships. So, what I mean by this is those relationships that are very draining, those relationships where it feels like one person may be feeding off of or depending on the other for their survival. So it may sound counterintuitive, but where I'd like to start is pregnancy. So during pregnancy, a woman is carrying a fetus whose life is dependent on her. What she does, the fetus does. What she eats, the fetus eats. What she is stressed by, the fetus picks up on. What she finds joy and pleasure in, the fetus also responds to. So there's this very symbiotic relationship there during pregnancy. Now, as that pregnancy progresses and it leads to birth, that infant is birthed and doesn't understand that there's a separation between it and its mother. There's a really strong survival instinct, in other words, instinctively wired to seek out the mother. There's also an accompanying sense of a fear of abandonment. If I am left, if there is no one here, I won't make it. And in infancy, that's very true. If we were born and just left to figure it out for ourselves, we would die. So that hard wiring, that being primed and looking for the mother, knowing her scent, knowing her sound. And if it's not our birth mother, we're still looking to find someone to serve as that secure base, that place that lets us know, hey, I can feel secure in this world. I can trust that my basic needs are going to be met. What I think happens when we are looking at these vampire relationships is somewhere in early childhood, somewhere in development, the natural trajectory of growth and development, something got thwarted. So for example, maybe it could be in utero and beyond, it could be, you know, after the infant is born, something. Let's say they were looking for their mother and their mother just wasn't there. Their mother wasn't as available as what they needed them to be in order to feel reassured, comforted, soothed, etc. So what can happen is that there is this hard wiring in that body, in that nervous system, in that brain, in the psyche that says, must find another in order to survive. Must find another in order to survive. And this kind of goes on and on and on, just kind of an unconscious mantra. And because they didn't get that feeling of, it's safe, it's okay, that hard wiring keeps that vigilance going. And then the person grows up, and we're really taking a lot of leaps here. We're now in adulthood in a romantic relationship. And it could be, you know, earlier relationships and other factors play into this as well, of course. But here we are in a relationship and that drumbeat that, you know, must find another in order to stay safe, must find another in order to survive, keeps going and going and going. So I think this is one way just to start with how these kind of someone could be wired, let's say, to feel like they are dependent on another and maybe need to feed off of or, you know, suck on another in order to stay alive. Another example could be after we're born, maybe our mother, we're seeking her and she's physically there, but she herself is in her own survival state. She's not able to be calmed, soothed, regulated. So we're wiring with her. It's not just in utero, it's after we're born as well, right? So what she's feeling, we're absolutely going to be picking up on. So maybe we're kind of bonded together in this kind of survival. Okay, it's the two of us. We're in this threatening situation. Perhaps the mother is in an abusive relationship. Perhaps the environment isn't safe for one reason or another. Perhaps the mother has some of her own traumas that are coming up, and she just hasn't found her own safe, secure base within herself. Maybe even it's the birth of the infant that puts her in survival, which is very understandable too. So I think all of these things can, that example could also lead to those early bonding and what bonding looks like and how that survival instinct kind of gets muddled. It kind of isn't, doesn't allow for healthy growth and development in our adult relationships if we carry that pattern or instinct forward. Now, I think that anyone can fall into, you know, these kind of vampire relationships. And another way of maybe classifying this would be a host and a parasite. I know that sounds not too romantic, but this is what it can feel like psychologically and even physically. So one person is carrying the responsibility for the other's life or for their psychological well-being, and the other person can almost appear healthier than the host. The parasite, let's say, can almost look healthier than the host because they're doing just fine. They're getting their needs met. You know, they're fed regularly. They're played with. They have someone to attach to. Let's just say, for the host, the one carrying and taking responsibility for another who should be at this point in their life able to take responsibility for themselves. That's the big difference here, right? We're not talking about an actual infant mother relationship. We're talking about two grown adults. The host or the one carrying the other can start to develop a whole variety of symptoms, such as low energy, fogginess, disconnect from themselves, not quite able to do anything without considering the other. What I mean by that is if you think about someone kind of taking up space inside of you, well, they're naturally kind of going to be in there too, right? So you have to be mindful of not only yourself, but also this other person you're kind of carrying around. So, hey, maybe I'd like to go do this, but so-and-so wouldn't really like it. And it doesn't feel the same as, hey, it might upset them if I go do this, so I just won't. It's, I'm going to feel that upset on the inside because I'm carrying them around on the inside. So in some weird way, I'm also going to be upset because they're upset and they live inside of me. Strange sounding, I know. But I think another way of kind of thinking about this would be if we think about an actual intestinal parasite, let's say. When we have a parasite in our body, sometimes we get cravings for what that parasite would need in order to stay alive, which we ourselves may not want that. We may not want the sugar or the carbs or whatever the particular sustenance that parasite feels it needs in order to stay alive. It sends signals to us, and then we go probably fairly unconsciously and consume that in order to maintain the life of the parasite. So that's another way I think kind of the host can get a little, the signals get cross-wired, and it's hard to determine, you know, is this my desire or the other person's desire? So that gives a little bit of insight into the complexity, I think, of these dynamics. Now, in our society, at least American society, there are a lot of stories and books and TV shows and films about vampires and love stories relating to vampires. I think this is really interesting, actually, to think about. When I was contemplating this, the one that comes to my mind, the forefront of my mind, is Twilight, the Twilight series, and the Cullen clan, the vampires, particularly Edward Cullen, and falling in love with the human Bella Swan. Now, a lot of fans of that series would likely say that Edward is the epitome of a gentleman. Edward and Bella have a timeless classic love story. That it's hard to say, hey, there's anything wrong with this, because it looks kind of like that kind of ideal romantic love, let's say, between the two of them. But upon further reflection, if you really think about this, I was contemplating, for example, Edward in the films and in the movies seems very protective of Bella. And we could maybe project and say, oh my gosh, what a wonderful part. He cares so much about her. This is just incredible how she has an accident or she maybe is put in harm's way and he gets angry and, you know, is always there to save her and play this protector role. But I kind of question, is that really being protective or is that being possessive? Because the fact of the matter is, Edward feels he's not going to make it and he doesn't want to be quote unquote alive, however alive the vampire is in, you know, in the biological sense. He doesn't think he wants to be in this world if she's not in it. So it's almost like what happens to her happens to him, which again, we can romanticize, but I also would want to say, he's kind of maybe reacting from a place of his own survival instinct in that way too. And take it out of this example, but just kind of generalize that. So how might in relationships that on the outside, it might appear like, well, I can't get mad at someone because they're really being protective, when in reality, maybe it's coming from that more, again, primal, instinctual, hey, I'm not going to make it because I depend on you or I survive based on feeding off of you. So if something happens to you, I lose my supply. And therefore, I need to keep you, you know, in a box. I need to keep you as my prized possession and do whatever I can in order to, you know, maintain your life. But that's not really for the sake of the partner. That's for the sake of the one kind of in this kind of vampire role, let's say. Okay. So another thing I wanted to distinguish in this vampire kind of host parasite relationship is that sometimes I also think this possessiveness can lead to kind of transitioning a little bit here, but I think this dynamic of having a muse comes up a lot in these stories too, where it's really common in the beginning to idealize the person we've just met and really be infatuated, right? Like that's a common thing. When someone is playing the role of the muse in someone's life, what I think happens is they're feeding off of the other to give them some type of creative mojo, some type of get their wheels turning and spinning. And oftentimes that can lead to a materialization of the creative instinct. So maybe someone develops or grows or does something as a result of that muse being in their life. Well, I would kind of wonder if muses sometimes are used and fed off of for whatever it is that the person is using them for. What I would offer instead of being a muse would be maybe being a source of inspiration. So if we are a source of inspiration to a partner, that means we can be honored and respected in our own right and also be able to do our own creative endeavors, while the partner is, you know, inspired to do whatever is kind of swirling around inside of them that's seeking to be made manifest. So when we serve as a muse, in other words, for a partner, our own vitality, our own creative life force energy can get sucked from us because it's being used to fuel someone else's creative endeavors. So I think that's another way in vampire relationships, and maybe a subtlety even, because I think for a muse to feel, oh, I'm special, I'm admired, might feel like it's feeding them, you know, initially, but we are more than objects. We need more than admiration. We also need to create and be vital within ourselves and express ourselves too. So another piece that I wanted to offer with vampire relationships too is this concept of fusion. So same thing, in the beginning of a relationship or at some point, it's normal to collapse our individual identities and be a part of something, be a part of this relationship together. However, through time, and just like in that mother-infant relationship, there's total fusion in the beginning, but developmentally speaking, things start to separate. We start to come back to our individual selves while still being able to connect with and relate with the other person, treating them as another person. This is a relationship, the relating between two people. That is the relationship piece. If we stay in a perpetual state of fusion, we don't have a real relationship. There's no real relating that can happen. Here's an example. Let's say you are around a couple and you ask one individual in that couple a question. Hey, how did you feel about that movie you just watched or something like that? They may say, well, we really thought this and we felt that and we wondered this and we da 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 da. That might be a clue or an indication. Ooh, we've got a lot of fusion here. You just asked an individual a question and they responded as if their identity is the couple or the we. So of course you can use the word we, and it doesn't mean that you're in a perpetual state of fusion or in a vampire relationship. But I think through time, you can kind of start to see that, oh, wait a second. Where's the individual over here? How do we have real relationship, eye to eye, one to one relating, if whatever one feels, the other is just automatically going to adopt as their way, their belief system, their opinions, their desires, their preferences, etc. So vampire relationships put the burden on one person oftentimes, and it's the host, whoever's playing the host, at least at the time, to be the brains or to be the visionary or to be the idea. And, you know, the other follows suit or the other tries to make that happen in order to stay pleasing, let's say, so that they can remain in their cozy, womb-like place that the host is providing for them. So by then, we can see the cycle here, the feedback loop. By giving the idea maker or the one who has the dream or vision what they want, in some ways that keeps the vampire, they're like, whew, I get to live to see another day because they're happy and I made them happy and therefore we're good. Therefore, my survival instinct can seemingly kind of lie dormant. However, I would argue that that survival instinct is the very thing that is leading to the too much we-ness and too much borrowing identity from the other. And really, there's just no real person to relate with here. So these are just some ideas to put forth to reflect upon. If you find yourself in a vampire relationship, or if you know someone maybe that's in a vampire relationship, there's another layer here, which is the realm of psychopathology. And the way I'm talking about it is so that we can understand it and get really clear. And if you're in a relationship like this and you both, not just one, but both want to do the hard work of separating, becoming your own people, and finding a new pattern in your relationship, then I think that's very, very possible. However, these things can go pretty dark. So I would imagine a lot of the love stories gone wayward, meaning like, let's say sometimes people, if I can't have you, no one else can kind of thing, and acts of violence and all sorts of things happen because there's such a low level of differentiation. There's such a low level of sense of me or self that I'm going to be okay without you. And so if I'm going down, you're going down with me kind of thing. So you can hear like this can get really, really dark. I think that's why it's really important to talk about. And then how do we kind of work through this? Well, we've got to do our trauma work. We've got to go and face our primal fears of abandonment. We've got to somehow develop the capacity to feel safe and secure within ourselves. And I think if we look at the psychology of both the vampire or the parasite and the one that's hosting, the one that's kind of playing the surrogate mother, there's a lot that we could probably extract from the psychologies of each of these types of people as well. For example, maybe a host, someone who's taking in another and carrying the other, also has their own pain around being abandoned and doesn't want anyone else to ever feel the pain of that. So don't worry, I'll take care of you. I'll take you in so that you don't have to hurt. And in some ways, then I don't have to hurt too, even though it does cause pain. So those are just some ideas, more again, points of reflection and ways into this. I think that these relationships occur in all sorts of different types of interactions and exchanges with people. I think you know when you're around someone who you're not in a committed relationship with that it's like, oh gosh, I feel really drained after being around them, or I find myself compulsively doing some caretaking. And you know, these might be signals or indicators, hey, something's going on here. And again, that's the moment to pause and say, we don't have to say something's wrong with them or something's wrong with me. We just say, what's going on here? Let me get curious about this. I think if you're a person who's wired to kind of have more of that cling, 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 I have to have someone in as my flotation device. Like I'm bobbing here and they're bobbing, but I gotta cling, I gotta stay on or else my life is going to end. I think we can understand, you know, viscerally what that might feel like and how difficult that would be to make your way around in this world feeling that way on an ongoing basis. So lots of empathy, lots of compassion there. I also think we can understand if you've been doing a lot of the heavy lifting for a partner and, you know, you can't really even get clear about what you want to do next because you're carrying this person 24/7. So it's really difficult to live your own life and how painful that is too, that on the one hand, here you are providing a selfless act and an act of service to another, but on the other, it comes at the greatest cost, which is the cost of yourself, which is the cost of your own life. So I hope these ideas, this conversation gets you thinking, reflecting. If you have any additional insights or perspectives, I'd love to hear them. And I'm happy to do more episodes related to this too. I just thought this would be a good primer to talk about this vampire relationship and some of the dynamics that go into that. All right, I'll see you next episode. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. If you're interested in learning about ways to work with me, head over to my website, themoderndayromantic.com. From there, you'll be able to contact me and learn a bit more about the customized intensives and retreats I offer both individuals and couples. Thanks so much for your support, and I'll see you next episode.